Jim? All right, I want to welcome everybody to the Florida Building Commission's concurrent meeting of the Roofing Technical Advisory Committee and the Building Structural Technical Advisory Committee. First order of business is to provide you with a brief overview of our teleconference participation process. Unless you're on the tech, or even if you are, depending, please keep your phones on mute but not on hold. Be aware that any background noise that you make, you're on a speaker is going to come through, we'll have to mute you. Please wait until you're invited to speak. I'll stack names to make sure that we preserve order and everybody has an opportunity to speak. Please state your name each time you speak, and TAC members, when you make a motion, please state your name, and those the person making the second, please also state your name. All right, so the first order of business is I'm going to go ahead and introduce those of us here in Tallahassee.
Jim Hammers.
Chris Howell.
Tom Campbell.
Deborah Lawson.
Justin Vogel.
Mo Madani.
And I'm Jeff Blair. All right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a roll call for the roofing TAC first, get the minutes and the agenda approved, then pause. I'm going to go over to the structural TAC and do the same thing, get the minutes and agenda approved, and then pause, and then we'll have our concurrent meeting after that. All right, so, and the way I'll do that is I'll introduce each agenda item, then I'll ask the chair of the respective TAC to ask for a motion to approve the minutes, and then do the same thing for the report, and then I'll switch over like that. All right, so roofing technical TAC, roll call. Commissioner Swope.
Here.
Commissioner Boyer.
Here.
Jimmy Buckner.
Here.
George Ebersold.
Here.
Commissioner Goff.
Here. Here.
Very good. Burt Logan. Burt
here.
Logan. Gaspar Rodriguez. Gaspar? Lorraine Alicio Ross. All right. Lorraine, are you there? All right. I understand that Frederick Koning is alternate for William Schultz. Frederick?
Here.
Karen Warsek?
Here.
And Mark Zanel?
Here.
We have 9 of 11 members constituting a quorum. Just to double check, is Gaspar Rodriguez or Lorraine Ross on the call? All right, so we have 9 present, and we'll go now. So I would ask, so today's agenda is to approve the minutes from the last meeting, to review and accept an interim draft report on the cost, impact, and benefits of 2018 ICO changes prescriptive, to review and accept an interim draft report for the webinar on the same, and then to review and accept an interim draft report for research project on the cost impact of 2017 FBC EB section 707.32 roof diaphragm roofing requirements, and then to receive a briefing and status update on the process for the 2018 ICO changes, and also on the documentation, and also on the TAC process for reviewing the same. Any public and then general public or member comments, and then to adjourn. Unless there's any questions or comments, Mr. Chairman, if you'd ask for a motion to approve the agenda as it was posted.
Would anybody like to make a motion to approve the June 26th meeting minutes?
I will move that. Poirier.
No, second. Karen.
Go ahead and call.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
All right, and now if we'll get a motion to approve the June 26th minutes as well.
Okay, I'm sorry. I took it.
Yeah, you're right. You did ask for that. So we approved the minutes, so now let's approve the agenda, which I read.
Yeah, I went backwards. I apologize for that. Could I get a motion to approve the meeting agenda as posted?
Move, Boyer.
Goff, second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. The roofing TAC is now open, and now we'll go to the structural TAC. Commissioner Schock.
I'm here. Thank you, Jeff.
Very good. Warner Chang.
Right here.
Commissioner Compton.
Here.
Chris Fartleman.
Here.
My understanding is Eduardo Fernandez is on for Jamie Gascon. Is that correct?
Right.
Did I hear anybody respond? Thought I heard some in the background.
Yeah.
Eduardo, are you on the phone, sir?
I'm here.
I heard him say I'm here. Okay, so I'm going to mark you. All right. Joe Hetzel?
Here.
Doe Kim? Dan Laverich?
Here, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. C.W. McCumber?
Here.
Craig Perino?
Here.
Steve Strawn?
Yes, I'm here. I would also announce that I have to step up at 11 o'clock for another previously arranged appointment, and if Mr. Dick Wilhelm can sit in as my alternate, I would appreciate it.
Very good, Steve. Thank you. Okay. The only person I have not heard from is Doe Kim. Doe, are you on? All right, so we have...
Yes.
You are here. So we have 11 of 11, obviously constituting a quorum. First order is to approve the agenda, which is to review and accept the interim, the minutes from the last meeting, the interim report regarding 2018 ICO prescriptive cost impact benefits, the webinar on the same, and then to review and accept the interim draft report for the cost impact 2017 FBC EB section 707.3.2 roof diaphragm roofing requirements, and to receive an update and report regarding the review process for 2018 ICO changes and also the tax process for reviewing the same. Take any general and then member comments and then adjourn. Mr. Chairman, if you'd ask for a motion to approve the agenda, sir.
To the structural tack, you've heard the agenda, and is there a motion to approve the agenda for the April 27th meeting?
Oops. Fartleman move.
Compton second.
Strong and Compton.
Got it.
Yeah. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
If you go ahead and do the minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. The next item is the approval of the July 27th, 2017 meeting minutes. They're posted with a hot link to the agenda. Is there anyone that would provide a motion to approve?
Leverage move to approve.
There's been a motion made and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Jeff, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So let me explain how we're going to do these next three agenda items. I'll introduce the presenter, in this case, Mo first, and then he'll introduce the presenter. Then we'll ask for any clarifying questions, and then from the TAC and then the public, come back to the TAC, and then I'll ask the chairman to ask for a motion to accept the interim report. We'll do the same for each of the three agenda items in turn, for each of the TACs separately, starting with roofing and then going to structural in each instance. So the first order of business that we'll have concurrent between the two TACs is evaluation of the cost impacts of 2018 ICO changes prescriptive. Mo.
Yeah. Good morning. This is Mo Medani, and as stated by Jeff, the project is evaluation of the cost impact of the 2018 ICC prescriptive code changes. This is similar to the project we did for the 2017 code when we reviewed the 2015 changes to the international code. And this project was approved by the commission last August as part of the 2017-2018 physical year research programs. And the objective of the project is mainly to review the 2018 ICC changes, especially those are prescriptive, and estimate their additional cost and benefits. And with us today is Dr. Issa, University of Florida. He's available to give us a status of the project, mainly interim reports. And after that, we will ask for approval of the interim reports. Thank you. Dr. Issa, are you on the line?
Yes. Good morning, everybody. So the first presentation is on the evaluation. Can I have control of the screen, please? Oh, there we go. Okay. Okay, so the first presentation is an evaluation of the cost, impact, and benefit of the 2018 IBC prescriptive code changes. So the team, so this is the research team. There's five of us. I'm going to review what build information modeling is. We talked about that last time. It's an intelligent 3D model with embedded information and specifications for all the material and system selection of a project as well as their associated properties. It's also a virtual collaboration resource for the parties on the project. So what we're doing in the building information modeling, we're taking the structural, architectural, plumbing, HVAC, electrical, and fire protection models and do a federated coordination model for all of them. This is some examples of the HVAC model in Rinker Hall. That's a cut through a building showing you in three dimensions all the components in the building. Same thing on this one. This is a building with transparent walls so you can see all the systems in the building. This is an example of takeoff of the steel components, structural components in the building. And so we have a bunch of data fields that we can manipulate in the building. These are the quantities that we extract from that, and that's how we come up with a model for the final cost of the model for the final phase project. So the purpose of the research is to assess the cost, impact, and qualitative benefit of the 2018 International Building Code changes. They're prescriptive in nature and they have the potential of adding cost to any construction activity. So the statement of work includes review, analyze the approved 2018 I-code and NEC changes to identify code changes and provisions that are prescriptive in nature and have potential of adding cost to construction. Number two is to look at the literature in this area. Number three is to estimate the construction cost impact. Those provisions are not covered under two, using good engineering judgment and feedback from general contractors and consulting engineers. Four, is to use a standard set of baseline residential and commercial building designs configured for the 2018 I-code to determine the cost impact of code changes. So we looked at five commercial buildings and two residential buildings. The five commercial buildings were a small elementary school, a standalone retail building, a small hotel, a small office building, a high-rise apartment. The two residential buildings were a one-story and two-story house on slab foundation. Under five, we're comparing the costs using the 2018 code to the cost using 2015 codes with Florida specific changes, and then we use this information to determine the cost differences between the homes. You know, we also use RS Means cost database and other cost databases. So the deliverables are this draft report that we're talking about today, and a final report by June 1st. So here in this table, we show the changes we encountered. Most of them were not prescriptive, or the ones that were prescriptive were not too costly. They were in terms of pennies per square foot. So do we have any questions about any of this?
Thank you.
Have the report in front of you. It has very details and large tables and all this information.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Issa. Does any TAC member have any questions they'd like to ask or any comments they'd like to make regarding the interim report? All right. Does any member of the public have any? All All right, then going first to the roofing tech, Mr. Chairman, if you'd ask for a motion to accept the interim report as it's been posted and presented.
Yes. Could I get a motion to accept the interim report?
Tell me.
Boyer. We need a second.
Got a motion? Can I get
okay.
I'm going to put you in a sec. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
All right.
Hearing no, just election carries.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll turn over to Commissioner Schock for the same on your end, sir.
Thank you, Jeff. For the structural attack, you've heard the interim report for the evaluation of the cost, impact, and benefits of the 2018 I-Code changes, descriptive code changes. And if there's no questions, does anybody have a motion to approve the interim report?
Strong move.
Compton second.
Motion is made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing no opposition, the motion carries. Thank you, Jeff. Back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we move to our next item, which is to review and accept the interim draft report on the webinar for the same. Hello?
Yeah. This project is really a complement to the cost analysis of project that you have just heard. This is mainly another project that was approved by the Commission last August as part of the 2017-2018 fiscal year research program. The objective of the project is mainly put together instruction or in a webinar settings by which an individual who's planning to propose a code change can mainly utilize the information that we already have in the database that put together by University of Florida for the cost impact project to estimate their code change using the building information modeling tools that we are using for the cost impact project. Dr. Issa is on the line and will give us a briefing or a status of the project. Thank you. Dr. Issa?
Thank you, Mo. So the next presentation is by the Florida Building Code Changes Cost Impact Workshop. The issues we're trying to address is to allow people that want to make suggestions that the code changes, to use the tools we developed to attach a cost to those changes. And so the scope of work was to establish a workshop website and to use the reports and spreadsheets developed on the 2015 ICC code study to allow public access to the data we have to develop their own cost impact. So we had the workshops. We had there was an interim report due on the 15th of February. Final report due on June 1st. I'm going to take you to the website where the webinars workshop. So this is what it looks like. We have a welcome, of course, a disclaimer, workshop description and objectives. All these are videos. We have about a couple of hours of videos out here, so I'm not going to go through all of them. I don't think you want to spend 2 hours watching all these. So the first thing we do, we have our walkthroughs of all the buildings in the workshop. So there's a one-story residence building, a two-story residence building, a small office building. In the small office building, we're looking at architectural, structural, and MEP fire sprinkler videos. We have a standalone retail building, a primary school building, small hotel, mid-rise 20-story apartment building. So there are videos on all three aspects of these buildings. And then you can go to the project review, which is module one. We look at where we describe the models again. We give details on the seven building types. Then we go over the software implementation and BIM-enabled quantity takeoff cost estimation module, and we reach a conclusion there. So basically what we have set up in here are spreadsheets, so it's easy for everybody to use. You don't have to go use building information modeling software. Then we have the using the spreadsheet template. It has the module quantities for the existing models. We have we show you how to link to the RS Means online cost or to your own private cost databases, and show you how to come up with the total building cost and the impact on the building. And then module 3 talks about the data input, which is the Florida building code, prescriptive code changes, customizing the code data, the code change impact for commercial buildings, the code change impact for residential buildings, the impact of the code changes on cost, and then conclusion. And then there is the overall conclusion. So that, in a nutshell, is the content of the webinar.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Issa. Does any TAC member have any questions or comments regarding the webinar? All right. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question or comment?
Joe Belcher.
Go ahead, Joe.
Joe Belcher.
Go ahead, Joe.
Ray, Dr. Issa, is the
yes, Joe.
Webinar, good morning. Is the webinar website live now?
Yeah, it is. That's how I'll link to it.
We can get to it from that link that...
right, it's in the report. The link is in the report, so you click on it and get to it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other members of the public? All right, then going back to the roofing TAC, Mr. Chairman, if you would ask for a motion to approve this the interim workshop webinar presentation.
All right, TAC, could I get a motion to approve the webinar as presented?
So moved, Boyer.
But what are you saying?
No, it's not.
CW.
I got a
John Sparrow seconded.
Okay. Can I get it all in favor?
Aye.
Chris, did you get the set? Who made the second? He's on that tack. Can I ask who made the second for the roofing tack, please?
I believe it was Eversole.
Very good. Okay, so that passes unanimously, and I'll turn it over to Commissioner Schock for the structural TAC.
Thank you, Jeff. To the structural TAC, you've all just heard the interim report for the webinar workshop and evaluation of cost impacts of the prescriptive code changes. If there's no further discussion, is there a motion to approve the interim report?
Average move.
Compton move to approve.
Yeah, I heard Laverich approved. Compton, do you do second?
Yes, sir.
Okay, the motion was made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All right, opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Back to you, Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right, we go to our next agenda item, which is to receive an interim draft report on the cost impacts 2017 FBC EB Section 707.3.2 roof diaphragm roofing requirement. Mo?
Yeah, Mo Medani, if you recall last year during the workshop, there was a lot of debates in relation to Section 707.3.2 of the Florida existing building code as it relates to the roof diaphragm at the time of re-roofing. And a part of the research project for this fiscal year, the commission approved this research project, which is really the objective for it is to estimate the cost impact of Section 707.3.2 requirement, which mainly require that the whole roof be replaced or improved when more than 50% of the roof diaphragm is removed. And at that point, that the diaphragm and the connections in their existing conditions are not capable of resisting 75% of the wind loads. And with us today is Dr. Issa to give us an interim report on the project. Dr. Issa.
Okay. Thank you, Mo. So we're going to be talking about section 707.3.2 of the existing building, roof diagram, re-roofing problem here. The research team is myself and R.N. Silopine. He's online from the Quest Engineering Testing. So the issues we had to address was assess the cost impact of the 2017 Florida Building Code, existing building, section 707.3.2, roof diaphragm re-roofing. Requirements and the provisions that require that the whole roof be replaced or strengthened where more than 50% of the roof diaphragm is removed in zones where the ultimate design wind speed exceeds 150 miles per hour in diaphragm and connections in their existing condition are not capable of resisting at least 75% of those wind loads. So the scope of work was to establish permanent six models of roofing types that we were going to look at. So these were looking at analysis and evaluation of existing non-code compliant roof deck types built prior to the year of March 1, 2002, as identified by Factory Mutual and the National Roofing Contractor Association. So we're going to look at wood, metal, and steel bar joists, lightweight concrete unbarred joists, gypsum and space joists, Tectum and space joists, and lightweight engineered composite deck systems. And then design corrective protocols for the six roof deck types as selected under the previous task for each of the following three scenarios. So at the end of the day, we would have 18 total scenarios. The three scenarios are enhanced fastening of the roof deck, roof-to-wall connections, enhanced fastening, entire roof deck replacement. So six roof types, three scenarios, that's 18 total cases. And then establish cost estimates for the cost of performing aforementioned engineering protocols for replacing through bids from three Florida licensed roofing contractors for all scenarios. Interim report was required by March 15th, and a final report is required by June 1st. So we have in the report, we have two bid packages. One of them is a certainty modified bitumen SBS roof system over lightweight concrete decks. The roof system's Miami Dade notice of acceptance number is 140529.01. The system design pressure is minus 52.5 PSF limitation number 7. The system comprises a mechanically attached base sheet, self-adhered flintastic ply sheet, and a torched-down flintlastic cap sheet. The second one for the report is a certainty modified roof over steel decks. So those are two of the models. We're in the process of finishing four more. We've consulted the six all stakeholders in this field to make sure we're meeting the needs and intent of the study. We've also consulted FRSA to get their input, and that's where we are at this point.
Thank you, Dr. Issa. Any TAC member have any questions or comments on the interim report?
Jim Shaw, yeah. I have a question.
Sure, Jim.
Yeah, my question, it goes to the exception of this is only required if it doesn't meet the requirements of ASCE 7, 1988. So in your research, are you taking that into consideration when you try to determine the financial impact overall? And on top of that, have you had any input yet from the storm damage on the pre roofing projects that were pre Florida building code.
Mr. Salafon, I'm going to let you answer this question.
Okay. As far as the wind load impacts are concerned, we are running these simulations based on the current code. So as to the question of what happens if it was done before the ASC 788, well, anything that's done since 2002 is post 788. So I think that cutoff of 2002, I think by then we had gone to ASC 793, or 95, one of those, so we should be okay. None of these cases will involve the ASC 788.
But just to follow up, but since none of those cases this section would apply to, since they were past ASC 1988, are we really getting at the issue, I guess, is my question. If I'm making sense.
Maybe I'm not following exactly what you're questioning, because if the cutoff point was anywhere for properties constructed after the 2002 code, then by definition they would not be under the 788.
Well, I guess where I'm coming from, when you re-roof, okay, the building is going to be a building that was built in 1989, let's say. Now they have to re-roof it. Under the exceptions of that section, they don't have to redo the diaphragm because it falls under the exception because it was built after the ASC 7-1988 requirement. So the financial impact doesn't become an issue, in my view, the way I'm seeing it, until you look at buildings that were built prior to that 1988 criteria.
Mr. Schock, it's Brian Sloan. I agree with you completely as far as on the building which you're re-roofing for the first time. I think what we're more so worried about is buildings that were built your age there, 1988. I think that the study we've got is based off of a building, test study based on a building built in 1974. It would be on its second roof cycle where this would come into effect, where it wouldn't fall into place on the exceptions that were given in the code section as far as those code cost impacts.
Jim, you want to follow up?
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I'm thinking about what he's saying. I guess if the diaphragm was built prior to the 1988 and they re-roofed it, unless they removed the diaphragm would still be, providing it's in good shape, meet the requirements of the ASB 788. I guess I need to think about it a little more. I wasn't really thinking about that so much. I don't know. I'd open it up to the other structural TAC members. They may have feelings about this too.
All right. Do other TAC members have questions or comments?
Yes. Yes, Jimmy Buckner.
All right, Jimmy, go ahead.
Okay. The part that I'm concerned about is the definition of diaphragm. If you look in the chapter 2, it does define in the building code diaphragm. It's got a couple of sentences, and then it ends up, when the term diaphragm is used, it shall include horizontal bracing systems. So that's the part that when we get into this cost, it's not just the mechanical fastening of the deck for vertical up and down loads. A diaphragm structurally for structural PEs is part of the horizontal mainframe system, but to transmit lateral loads that hit the walls down to the foundation. So that would require a reverse design of an old building of the entire mainframe structural system. That's the part there, not just the putting some more nails or screws in right into the deck, and this does require then for a design professional to have to go back and reverse design the entire building. So that's where the costs get up, and finding somebody to do that, to walk out and figure out how an older building was designed. It's not mandatory that the roof deck be part of the horizontal mainframe system. X-bracing, portal frames in the walls, portal columns, is a method to take those loads. The first thing is to determine, is the roof deck part of the lateral structural system, and then start trying to analyze if it's stiff enough, if the connections from the roof deck to the walls that transmit these loads, which gets into fairly complicated design. So that would need to be factored into both the cost for the analysis, and then the remedial construction costs. So that was the big question there. So I just want to throw it out, because diaphragm is defined pretty specifically in chapter 2. So I'll kind of throw that out. Thank you.
Thank you,
Jim. And Jim Schock here, if I may add to that, I think that's why I'm more concerned about what the cost impacts are on buildings that are not built under a minimum, the ASC 7-1988, because they don't have to worry about any of that. So I guess that's kind of wrapping up where we're coming from.
All right. Any other TAC members wish to comment?
Warner, Chair.
Yeah. Go ahead, Warner.
All right. So under the exception 3, it clearly stated that the framing member evaluated for wind uplift only, right? So I mean, I think it's pretty clear to me that we just need to secure the deck to the frame. I do understand that the interpretation of the roof diaphragm and tied into the lateral framing system, I do understand that, but I think the language in exception number 3, it clearly states wind uplift, and that's sort of what I'm focusing on, and I'd like to emphasize that during a re-roof, you know, I think it's more important to look at the roof deck for the uplift rather than, you know, try to tie it into the rest of the building.
Okay. Thank you, Warner. Any other TAC members wish to comment?
Yeah. Jimmy again. Okay. You know, that would definitely simplify maybe in the modification. Take the word diaphragm and out, because it is defined in chapter 2, where we're supposed to go with, you know, for starters, and say roof deck, okay, roof deck uplift, and take diaphragm out if we don't want to get into lateral mainframe bracing, because diaphragm is defined as lateral in chapter 2, so. Maybe the modification would be take diaphragm out and say roof deck and uplift. And yes, that would simplify it and get back to probably the intent of the, this provision. So, I think that might be a solution. Thank you.
All right. So I think, Jimmy, what you're suggesting is under exception 3 to change the word diaphragm with roof deck. Is that correct?
Yes, then it makes it plain for a design professional and everybody, and if that's the intent, yes, then that is a much more simple and pretty much typical, operating procedure.
Right.
Is
you.
To, yeah.
All right, thanks, Jimmy. Mo, you want
to say? I just wanted to say here something. If you look at section 707.3.2, it says that the roof diaphragm, connections of the roof diaphragm to the roof framing member and the roof-to-wall connection shall be evaluated. So tell us what really need to be evaluated, and it includes the roof diaphragm as part of the evaluation. And as you mentioned, the roof diaphragm will include mainly the structural members for lateral resistance and all that in the roof diaphragms. The struggle was there whenever really this came up is, yes, what is a roof diaphragm? And, you know, I think ASCE 7 does define, give you a clear definition of the roof diaphragm. But the question is, are we talking about only the roof covering, or are we going into the actual frame and structure of the roof? And it seems that the analysis or the research project that we're doing, it is really comprehensive, so it's taking in consideration the roof diaphragm. All what we need at this point is really from you to tell us if we are really, in terms of the approach and the research work that we're doing, are we covering all the bases or not? And I think, and that's where we stand at this point, is to really, to me, it seems like we have enough cases there and enough test cases to do that. So.
All right, thanks, Mo. Any other TAC member wish to comment?
Yeah, Gaspar would like to comment.
All right, Gaspar, go ahead.
My question is, the roofs that are going to need this, the ones that are not in the exceptions, is anybody going to work on how many of those are going to need to be enhanced? In other words, are 2 out of 100 going to have to be enhanced, or is it going to be 99.9% of them are going to have to be enhanced? Because possibly if it's just 2%, maybe, I mean, the code can stay the same, and possibly, I mean, with Jimmy's comment about just being for the deck.
All right, Dr.
I think the issue here is two parts. I think Jimmy was touching. First is the cost of the evaluation. The efforts of going in and try to evaluate a roof, whether the roof that as exists will be able is really meet the 75% requirements with regard to the wind loads. And that's a big cost, the engineering evaluation. And the other part is the, you know, if really you have to improve, then what level of improvement do you have to make?
All right. Any other?
So let me ask you, Mo. It's Gaspar again. Then on the bid form, which I'm not sure if we've gone over or we're going to go over, is that number going to be itemized? Is it going to be a separate number, the actual cost to do the evaluation?
I would defer to the team, the research team. I think they're probably best.
Okay. Mr. Salafan?
Okay. Actually, yes. We in the bid form, we do have a separate item for an evaluation, which is we call it engineering, but engineering evaluation, and then a separate line item for the actual tie-in cost of each component, whether it is the deck to the framing or the deck to the side walls and the bracing and so forth.
So that would be number 7 on your bid form is going to be where it says associated engineering cost. That would actually be just the evaluation, just the cost of the engineer evaluating the roof?
Yes.
And one other question, one probably last one. You guys are going with, when you have to do the deck replacement, you're going with ISO board instead of lightweight concrete. Again, to get an apples-to-apples comparison, I would think you'd want to go with the lightweight, and that way there wouldn't have to be no change on the roof system. When you're going to ISO, you're going to have to use a different roof assembly, and it's, again, it's not really apples-to-apples.
No, I take your point. The only concern was this. If the entire lightweight concrete is being replaced, then, of course, you can go with the light system. But if it is just a small patch, in practice, people don't do that. But if that's how you want us to write it, we will.
All right. As far as going back with lightweight, these are going to be occupied buildings. And to pour fresh lightweight into an occupied building, you're opening yourself up for massive water intrusion during the project when you pour it, and second, while you're waiting for the deck to cure. you're going to have that building wide open in the middle of rain. That's why we would not go back with a lightweight concrete. You go back with ISO and get the roof building envelope back closed up. As far as an apples-to-apples comparison, that's the only way you would realistically do that job is to remove the lightweight and go back with ISO to get that building tightened back up.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Yeah, and that makes sense. But I would think maybe in your introduction or in the scope of the work, you might want to address that the building is occupied and will be occupied during the re-roofing.
Well, we could put that in there, but you know, I think that would kind of be assumed, being that you're on a second life cycle of a roof. But it can be in there. We can add it in there. But yeah, you would definitely want to get that buttoned up as quick as possible.
All right, thanks, Brian. Any other TAC members wish to comment before we go to the public?
Yeah, Jim Shock here, if I could make one more comment.
Yes, go ahead, Jim.
To try to pull this back a little bit to the cost study is really what we're dealing with here. Perhaps the cost study that they have should be supplemented by determining how much stock, the percentage of impact this has around the state. That's one issue that was discussed, and that I think is pertinent. And also, what cost impact would it have as far as dealing with upgrading of structures and the potential failures that storms and so forth would have down the road on those particular properties. I don't know if we talked about any of that at all, but that should be my last comment.
All right, thank you. Any other TAC members? And we kind of need to button this up because we have a lot more stuff to do.
Jeff and Brian, yeah. Again, I just want a clarification on the scope of work, number one. As far as non-code compliant decks, these decks are not necessarily non-code compliant. There's just we don't know whether they're code compliant because there's no testing on buildings that were built, pre-1988. And then also FM, as far as the FM approved, FM does not declare a deck code compliant. It lists them out, but FM is not the code compliant agency as far as who deems that debt compliant or not.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yep. Mark.
Who?
Mark Zanel. Mark Zanel.
Yeah, Mark, go ahead.
Okay. So in the cost analysis, Dr. Issa, I'm just curious. The assumption on what I'm reading here is that we're just going to say these are not compliant, kind of like what Brian was just saying, and they don't even come close to meeting the 75%. Is that what we're doing? Because this kind of goes along with what Jim Shock was asking as well. So if these buildings, if we were actually to take an actual building and make a determination, if it's within 75%, none of this has to be done.
Correct. So we're assuming it's not within.
Okay, but it goes back to what Gaspar was asking as well. So there's no way to really tell, percentage-wise, whether it's 10%, 15%, 2%, 100%.
Not without inspection. Yeah.
Okay, so in essence, you're just going to assume that they're bad, and this is what it's going to cost to fix this particular building.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. Any other comments? All right. Does any member of the public wish to comment before we go back to the text to accept the interim report with the understanding that the consultant will evaluate the comments made today? All right. I'm going to go to Commissioner
Mike Silvers.
Who is it?
Mike Silvers with FRSA, Technical Director. Hopefully, I can clear up a couple of things. One, we have an existing study that has the requirements in it for the study. And those are to look at three different things: enhanced fastening of the roof deck, if it's required, roof-to-wall connection enhancement fastening, if that's required, or if, in fact, the deck cannot have an analysis done because there are no uplift data. And, again, we'll go back to one I've talked about ad nauseum, a gypsum deck which has no uplift values. They're not out there. So on any gypsum deck, if you ask an engineer to do the analysis, they're not going to be able to do an analysis because there are no baseline information for that uplift resistance. So that means that any gyp deck automatically is a failure. The way the study has been set up, there will be a cost for a roof replacement that doesn't require any deck enhancements. There's going to be a amount that it takes to look at a particular type of deck so that the engineer can do that analysis, and what that cost would be. If they find it's correct, then that would be the only cost involved. If it needs to be refastened, then that there would be a cost involved with refastening of it. And if, in fact, the edge securement or edge details need to be enhanced, that would be part of the analysis, part of the cost study. And then the final one would be if the deck cannot be completely replaced, what that cost would be.
Great. Thanks, Mike. That's helpful. Any other members of the public wish to comment? All right, Commissioner Swope. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Doug Buck. You know, I sort of had the same question, kind of bobbing in and out of this meeting, just because it doesn't directly pertain to new construction. What happens if people can't afford the additional costs? I mean, I think somewhere along the line, the commission needs to be talking about that, because, you know, I'm always thinking that if just, you know, the objective is to have, you know, as well-built structures as we can, of course, the individual, if they can't afford it, may not have work done, which doesn't do anybody any good. So I just throw that out there. I'm always interested in what the commission thinks about.
All right, thanks, Doug.
Cost to the consumer.
Thank you, Doug. Anybody else in the public?
Mike Silvers, Mike Silvers again. Doug, that's the whole reason we're doing this study, is to find out what this requirement does in cost on a particular type of building. And granted, they are the buildings that were built prior to 1988, but that's an awful lot of buildings. How practical is it to do this analysis? What's the cost involved? And where might it lead? And hopefully provide the commission that information so that we can do a cost analysis on this particular section of the building code that was never done. It came in with the existing building section. There was never any cost analysis done. It's been sitting there ever since. And it's an extremely expensive and burdensome requirement for roofing contractors, because we very seldom roof less than 50% of the building. We roof the whole building. And it requires that we go out and do these analyses on every one of those that doesn't fit into one of these exceptions. And again, that's a lot of buildings.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Anybody else in the public? All right. Let's close the discussion on this for today and go back to the roofing tack. And if Commissioner Swope, if you would ask for a motion to accept the interim report with the understanding that Dr. Issa will evaluate the comments that were made here today in the context of the report.
Okay. With that being said, I'll entertain a motion to accept the interim report by Dr. Issa, taking into consideration the comments that were made today in this call.
Logan, so moves.
Poirier, second.
All right. I've got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Commissioner Schock, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. To the structural tack, is there a motion to accept the interim report for the cost impact of the 2017 Florida Building Code existing building, section 707.3.2, roof diaphragm re-roofing requirements, taking into consideration the discussions today as they may relate to the report. Is there a motion?
Compton moved to approve.
Okay, again, I heard Labridge and Compton.
Yes, sir.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the report, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Back to you, Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. All right, our next and final substantive issue is to provide a status update on the 2018 ICO change process. Mo will start off. I'll do a piece, and then Tom Campbell will conclude that.
Good morning. Again, this is Mo Medani, and as Jeff said, I'm going to go over item number D, as is stated on the agenda. And I'm going to click on the link here, which is going to take us to the code modification page. And you see it on the screen. First, you start with a detailed matrix, would give you the tracking charts, the details, you know, the code changes or the 2018 code changes that will be reviewed by each specific tag for each specific international code or subcode. But I'm gonna, underneath that matrix, there is a number of documentations available for you, which we're gonna go over it today. One is the, we wanna go over the development and adoption process for the seventh edition, 2020 update to the FVC. After that, we're gonna go over the sample of the tracking chart and detail reports. And then we're gonna talk about the meeting matrix and show you where the tax is gonna meet and so on. And the work plan for putting together the 2020 update to the Florida Drilling Code. So first one is the bar, a PowerPoint presentation that is, in this presentation outlined how we're gonna go about putting together the 2020 edition of the Florida Building Code, which is the next update. By the way, the scope of work, as is outlined here, has been approved by the Florida Building Commission at the April Commission meeting, which is last meeting. As you know, for the statute 553.73 was amended, and the amendment is really state that in order to update the Florida Building Code, that the current Florida Building Code, which is in this case the 2017 Florida Building Code, is to be used as the foundation for the update. However, why are we doing the update? We are required by statute that we review the current update to the International Building Codes and the NEC, the National Electric Code. So the process for updating the Florida Building Code now will consist of two steps. The step one is the review of the 2018 update to the International Building Code. And step two is the normal step that we have used to update the Florida Building Codes, which is the triannual code change process. And everybody is familiar with the process where we all in a cycle and people can propose code changes, and then we have a first 45-day comment period, then there's a second 45 comment period, and so on. So there's two steps process at this point. Step one is the review of the 2018 update to the International Building Code. This the review process has started in January 2nd, 2018. At that time, we have made available to you through link to the ICC websites. We have made available to you the 2018 I-codes, and we also made available to you the 2018 IBC Resource Handbook. This handbook has within it the monographs of the ICC code changes as approved at the I-code change process. Also, we have made available to you is through a link to the an FBA website, the 2017 National Electric Code, and the 2017 NEC changes. If you go to the link from here to the ICC website, you will see the depictions before you, which is mainly to give you the access to the 2018 codes, along with access to the handbook per subcode. In total, there is about 1,300 code changes to the 2018 I-codes. And in terms of the breakdown of the code changes, the FireTAC has the majority of the code changes, was about 334. The structural TAC would review about 275 code changes, roofing TAC 57, plumbing TAC 201, and so on. Electrical TAC and the swimming pool TAC, they would be reviewing the electrical requirements and other electrical requirements as it relates to swimming pool and the electrical TAC, other electrical TAC, other electrical requirements that relate to the IRC and other provisions within the international codes. The proposed scope of work. So, in order to really make this review possible, staff has been working and putting together a tracking charts along with detailed reports, so it can be published and downloaded and also made available at the meetings to review the I-code changes. The tracking charts have been constructed to provide for the code change number as established at the ICC level, the code section, change summary between the 2015 I-code and the 2018 I-code, including statement of cost impact. So what we did in the tracking chart, give you a very quick summary that summarize the code change and also the cost impact as presented in the monographs from ICC. Also, change summary between the 2017 FBC, 2018 I-code. This is mainly their staff would point out that there is a for the specific code change that need to be considered when considering the an I-code change that is really conflict or really need to be harmonized. Staff comment including whether the I-code change overlapping and existing for the specific change. So we will note on the tracking chart that there is an overlap here as far as the specific change that need to be considered. Hyperlink of the modification number to the code change monograph. So we'll have the tracking chart interact with the monographs through a hyperlink. So you'll have everything before you at the meeting. The fire correlation between the Florida Fire Prevention Code and the Florida Building Code, Florida law requires the correlation. With regard to that, we will continue to use the definition for conflict as the basis for the correlation with the 4-5 prevention code, meaning that the conflict means a construction specification such as dimension in one code that would prevent compliance with the other code. With regard to the National Electric Code 2017, the National Electric Code will be treated as a reference to standards. And that's really consistent with how the NEC is treated under the 4-5 prevention code, and also how the NEC is treated within the Florida Building Code, which from within Chapter 27 adopt the NEC as a reference standard or a reference document. However, the 2017 changes to NEC are available for review through the link that I pointed out to you earlier. With regard to, after we finish the review and everything, and the next step two is the triannual code change process. During this process, the subject of this review of the triannual would involve any code change to the 2017 Florida Building Code, the foundation. So anybody could propose a code change to the 2017 Florida Building Code. Anybody could propose a code change to the 2018 changes, whether those changes are approved by the commission or has not been approved. So all that will be open for proposals under this process. Overlapping provisions, ICO changes, overlapping an existing Florida specific change. We're, you know, anywhere where there is a Florida specific change in a code section in under the 2017 code that clashes or in conflict with the I code code change, those we call them overlapping provisions that we would like to really defer consideration of those under the triannual code change process and not address them under the review for step one. Change to the NEC, again, anybody could propose a code change to the National Electric Code under the triannual code change process, other as deemed necessary. Anybody could bring a new subject or during this process. Any questions on this?
Any TAC member have any questions? All right. Any member of the public have any questions? All right, Mo, next piece.
The next one is, I want to show you a sample of the tracking chart as hyperlinks to the monographs. So first of things is that this is the code review. First, we have a warning. We need to make sure that you understand that everything we post on our website and related to this code review process, a lot of it is copyrighted by the International Code Council. So we have given a permission to use the information for this process. I know you'll have the opportunity to download the information. We would ask that you use it for the purpose of this process. When we use any of the information for other subject matter, please contact the ICC and get their permission. This one, for example, for residential code IRC, the tracking charts will look like this. First, let's say, for example, it'll give you the code change number, RM1-15. It'll give you also the code section, M1-305.1.4.2. We'll give you also a summary of the code change. The summary is really, most of it came from the, it's coming from the monograph. It also will give you the cost impact statements as was given in the monograph, and we will tell you that, for example, same as change between the 2013 IRC and the 2018 IRC, meaning that there is no further specific change that interfere or has to be considered in this case. So strictly a change from one edition to another. And then if you click on the number, load change number, you will see you'll get access to the manograph. It'll tell you the, this is what really verbatim of what done at the I-code level and everything. So, and also we have a back button. It'll take you back to the tracking chart. And also we will have an action template here, which is where, first of all, the TAC action, during the review, the TAC action would be, they have to really state that if you would, they would like a code change to be included in the future update to the Florida Building Code, they need to state that this is accommodated for the specific need, and they need to elaborate on the basis for that, based on those criteria that are guided by rule, which rule 61G20-2.002, and the plan is to have those available to you as a footnote in every page of the documents, so you don't really, you know, it'll be readily available to you. And then also the commission will have the same opportunity to provide an action on it. And then there's sometimes there's code changes that no action needed, like example seismic or snow provisions or stuff that doesn't apply to Florida. Also, we have for residential, the commission have appointed a residential construction impact work group. That group, they will be reviewing the residential code changes and pointing out to the commission as a comment whether a code change is impactful or not. The next one, the next code change is RM15-15. This code change, we, as you see, the staff has a comment is saying overlapping provision to be considered during step two of the code change process. This means that there is a Florida specific change that to these sections that need to be considered or addressed, and we feel that should be addressed through the triannual code change process. So if I click on the code change number, that will take me to the manograph, and the manograph, as you see, is verbatim of what the I-code have used in the code change process. But in addition to that, if you scroll down, you will see that we have included also that language from the 2017 FPC, which shows that there is a Florida specific change as underlined. So in this case, really, you know, that means that in order to work on this, we need to really, somebody need to take the Florida specific change, work with the I-code language and see if they come up with a proposal for the triannual code change process. Same thing here. And also, throughout the chart, we will have some stuff really pointed out in red or in just to, if it's a clarification code change or if it's a seismic or if it's a flood provisions and all that. So we try to really give you some pointers as to help you kind of review it in a more expedited manner. This is the chart or the matrix. We will be uploading the tracking chart along with the manograph linked by May 1st. So we are working very diligently trying to get the information on time. So we'll do that. Now, I'm going to go out here, click on, go back here. Yeah. let's go to now to the work plan. This work plan was approved by the commission, and the work plan mainly set the timelines for, starting the process of the update to the Florida Building Code all the way to the when the code goes into effect. One important date, as I said, you know, this review started in January 2nd, where we made all the ICOD information for the 2018 available to you, including the NEC. May 1st, 2018, we will post on our website the tracking chart along with the monographs for the material to be used at the June on-site meetings. And then, as I said, the tech review of the code changes will take place June 7th through the 22nd. And I will go shortly through the tech meeting schedule. The residential construction cost impact work group will meet July 29 and the 30th, mainly they would review the recommendation of the tax and provide their comments to the commission on them with regard to whether the code change is impactful or not. And the commission will take up the work of the tax and everything on October 8 and 9. And the process, then on November 2nd, we will open the triannual code change cycle, and everybody will have about a month or so to propose code changes for the triannual code change process. And then we'll go through the first 45-day comment period, and then the second 45-day comment period, and all that will go through the same thing we went through for the 2017, hoping that the code will go into effect by December 31st, 2020. So that's the work plan. Any question on the work plan?
Does anybody have any questions on the commission's adopted work plan?
Then I'm going to go over the meeting schedule. This is a schedule that's available, and you can download it. The schedule, as you see, we're starting on Friday, the July 8th. Special occupancy will meet on site in Tallahassee here at the Betty Easley Conference Center. And the week after that, which is the week of the 11th, June 11th, we have the electrical tech and the swimming pool will meet on the 11th, and then we have the commission plenary session will be on the 12th, and then code admin will meet in the afternoon of the 12th, and then structural tech will meet on the 13th and 14th of June, and roofing will meet on the 15th. And the week after that, mainly the week of the 18th, June 18th, we have energy will meet on the 18th, the mechanical tech will meet on the 19th, plumbing on the 20th, fire tech will meet on the 21st and 22nd. And the meeting locations is as listed underneath the chart for the week of the 18th. The meeting will be in Daytona Beach. For the meeting on the week of the 11th, Altamont Spring. That's what I have for you, and I know if you have any question about the schedule.
Anybody have any questions?
Then Jeff and Tom.
Mo, if you would click on the attack review process, please. And then maybe scroll up a little bit.
What do you want me to scroll? Public comment?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. This is the tax review process for 2018 ICO changes as approved by the Florida Building Commission at their April meeting. Generally, we'll follow the same procedures we have for all of our code update processes. You know, one person speaks at a time, 3 minutes time limits, not reading prepared, lengthy prepared statements, offering new points and stating agreement and not repeating points. So as Mo showed you this, the matrix, what we'll go through for each TAC, I'll introduce the 2018 ICO changes by each page of each matrix. So but I'm going to ask first, I think we've made a little tweak to our process that would ask if any TAC member thinks that they might be recommending approval of any of the changes on that, just to say yes or no. We'll go to the public. Does any member of the public wish to speak? If someone wants to speak in favor, then they'll do so. If someone wants to speak in opposition, they'll do so. As we've done, we'll take proponents first and opponents. 3 minute time limits. If there are pros and cons, each respective side may have one collective rebuttal opportunity, again, for a limited time, offering new points, not repeating the points that have been said, et cetera. So that's our basic process. After we hear from the public, we'll go to the TAC on the next page, Mo. And the TAC process will follow this procedure. They'll decide whether to recommend to the commission the specific ICO change, any specific ICO change. In order to consider it, a member will be required to make a motion to recommend that the commission incorporate this specific 2018 ICO change into the 7th edition Florida Building Code, a second, and then discussion and a vote. We've already had public comment, so at that point it's just at the TAC level. If there isn't any motion to approve it, then I'll just move on, and by default that will indicate that there will not be a recommendation from the TAC. Since the commission process does not take motions to deny, the default will be, if there isn't an affirmative recommendation, that would be a negative in that regard. The TAC must decide on ICO changes exactly as drafted without any revision or tweakings. Again, the triennial process, which will be next year, is an opportunity for people to propose changes if they want to, a desire to, in our normal code process. But in this process, it's a yes or no on the exact change as drafted. So if a TAC member makes a motion to recommend the change, they must follow the statute and the rule, and those require establishing, which are basically is to explain why the change is needed to accommodate the specific needs of this state and which specific relevant criteria, and I won't read them all, I'll just summarize, establishing minimum life safety, et cetera, provide for flood protection, maintain eligibility for federal funding and discounts from the various federal programs like NFIPA, federal FEMA, and HUD, provide for energy efficiency pursuant to Title III of the Energy Conservation and Protection Act, maintain coordination with Florida Fire Pacific Code, and provide for latest industry standards and design. And according to Florida Statute 553737F, the commission may not, and nor may the TAC, of course, make a recommendation that would diminish the requirements of the Florida Building Code related to wind resistance, prevention of water intrusion. That's been there for a long time, so that's not different. What is different for the code processes only and not for other TAC actions, a two-thirds instead of three-quarters will be required for a favorable recommendation. The commission will still operate on their 75%, but the TAC recommendation for affirmative would only require two-thirds. The TAC recommendations will be for the commission pursuant to the rule and conformance with the commission's adopted schedule and work plan, which Mo has previously demonstrated. Anybody have any questions on that? All right, not hearing any either TAC or public comment on that, I'm going to turn it over to Executive Director Tom Campbell. Tom?
Can we get a public comment or question?
Yeah, sure, Joe.
I'm sorry, I was.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was on mute there.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jeff. I just while we're in the process thing, I just like if you could possibly make mention of what was discussed on the electrical TAC about the inference of no motion or no comment coming from or no request for adoption coming from the public, just so the TACs aren't hearing that the first time at the meeting. You said you would be making a statement at the initial.
Right. Okay.
Beginning of the TAC meeting.
Yeah. Good point. I skipped that one piece. So what we'll explain to each TAC before the meeting, and some of this is probably mitigated by the way we're going to tweak the process, in that we're going to ask the TAC members to first signal whether they intend to make a recommendation. That way the public will know before they're commenting. So if someone says, yeah, I'm going to make a proposal for you know, this particular one, then you'll know that, and we'll go back to the public without. But the default position is if a member of the public does not speak, the TACs will assume that means they do not want that change to go forward. So unless someone comes forward and says, we want this change, the default position that the TAC should interpret from the public is that we do not want this change because that's our thing. But since the TAC members will signal in advance what their intention is, then you'll know whether you need to speak proactively against it, if you will. And we'll explain.
Thank you, Jeff. And
go ahead.
Thank you. And I do like that signaling part there. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I think we got that from thinking it through a little further, and appreciate your comment to help us think it out. Any other members of the public?
Question.
Say your name, please.
Pardon, Deborah Lawson. Mo said that someone would submit where there is a Florida-specific amendment already in a section, the language to reconcile the two. Jeff said that the ICC amendments would be adopted exactly as they were done. So my question is twofold. One is, will the commission or the staff make proposals to meld the two, or will that come in the second phase when we do?
Okay.
Yeah.
There's two parts to it. First of all, during the review, staff on the tracking charts for the June meeting will note that there is a Florida-specific change, and that section is not subject to review at this point. We're not going to take any up or down on it. But what we're saying is that during the triennial, somebody would have an interest. If somebody has an interest in bringing in the ICO change, you have to really look at the Florida-specific code change and harmonize the two and submit a proposal to cover both. With regard to those Florida-specific changes that law specific, this came from statute, the staff would try to address those through the triangle. So staff would propose a code change for them through the triangle. So we're hoping that this is really dealing with the Florida specific changes and those ICO changes that clashes or need to be harmonized, that interested group also will take some lead on some of those. And staff will take the lead on the Florida-specific changes.
And so when we move into that phase of the process, we will probably be doing another presentation like this to explain what staff is going to do and what stakeholders will need to do. And then we'll open up the cycle.
And that'll be during the Florida-specific amendment cycle that starts late in November.
In the second part.
Okay. Step
yep.
two, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Next
right.
year.
Well,
all right. Any other public comment?
Question, Paul Coates.
All right, Paul, go ahead.
Hi, Jeff. Mo, I'm seeing two different versions of the meeting schedule, the meeting matrix. They both appear to be dated March 30th, and they have different dates for the different TAC meetings. I just wondered which one, is there one that is out of date?
I think there's two. Yes, there is one. The one that I presented, which is on the CodeMod page, is the one, the latest. The other one you're speaking of probably is posted on the commission agenda of the April meetings. We have noted at the meeting that we'll make some changes to, to address the changes that we made for the one that final. So the final to use is the one on the CodeMod page, which I gave a presentation on just a few minutes ago.
That's the one linked from the today's meeting agenda.
Yes, sir. Yes,
structural.
Sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome, Paul. Any other comments?
Tom? All right. I just wanted to address a few points for the review. This is a significant undertaking for the staff, the tax, and the stakeholders, and the commission. We plan to make the materials for the review available in early May, so everyone has enough time to go over the materials for the TAC meetings. You should come to the TAC meetings already having reviewed the materials and with an initial idea of which I-code changes, if any, you plan to recommend for approval. The TAC approval process is going to move briskly, and there will not be time to allow individuals to read a code change and all the accompanying information for the first time inside of a TAC meeting. I'd also like to discuss the criteria for recommending approval of an I-code change. In order to recommend an I-code change for approval, it must be shown that the changes are necessary to accommodate a specific need of this state. The commission has defined a technical amendment that's needed to accommodate a specific need of this state in Rule 61 G20-2.002 and items A through F. They are also included in Jeff's outline of the process, and you can actually find them all on the bottom of the tracking chart as well. These are the justifications that should most often be used when recommending approval of an I-code change for inclusion in the next version of the Florida Building Code. Lastly, what we really want to capture inside of the review is the big ideas and changes to the I-codes that protect the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of Florida. The review process should be focused on finding those changes to the I-codes that lead to stronger, safer, and better structures. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. All right, so is there any general public comment?
Jim Schock here. This is, I guess, to Tom. Just a clarification, because I've really never heard anybody clarify this to everyone, but when they talk about a specific need for Florida, they're not talking about a unique need to Florida and nowhere else. So you can have things that are specific needs to Florida that are needs in other parts of the country as well. I just wanted to, I mean, at least that's the way I'm interpreting specific need. And to Tom's, I guess, is that a correct interpretation?
Yes.
Okay. Does any other
Thank you.
Anybody else, TAC or public, wish to make any final comment before we conclude our meeting today? All right. Mo?
Anybody else? None? Okay. I just wanted to really, I missed one part. I need to really direct you to it. As you see, there's a matrix before you, which is has in it the tracking charts. Those tracking charts represent the listing of the code changes for the 2018 I-code. They're broken down by TAC and by subject matter and by subcode, and let's show you what each TAC would be looking at. And at least take your time to review those tracking charts and the code changes. And watch for May 1st, there'll be another metrics underneath, as you see. We will post the detailed reports into it, which has in it the information structured as I noted in the presentation. Thank you for being with us. this morning. Jeff, thank you.
All right, Mo. I'm going to do the roll call for the roofing tack and then ask Commissioner Swope to adjourn the meeting. Commissioner Swope.
Here.
Commissioner Boyer.
Here.
Jimmy Buckner.
Here.
George Ebersold.
Here.
Commissioner Goff.
Here.
Bert Logan.
Here.
Gaspar Rodriguez.
Here.
So, Gaspar, I need to ask you a question so we can have accurate voting. Were you present for all three of the reports or just two or one of them? Do you know?
Yes, sir. I was here from the beginning. I had an issue with the phone line, but I agreed with all the votes.
Okay, very good. So we'll adjust the votes accordingly. Thank you. Lorraine Ross, I presume you're still not on the call? All right. Frederick Koning for William Schultz. Karen Warsek?
Yes.
Very good. Mark Zanel?
I'm here.
All right, we have 10 of our original 10. Commissioner Swope, if you would adjourn the meeting, please.
I'll take a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved, Boyer.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Yeah.
Very good.
We'll adjourn. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, everyone.
All right. And if Commissioner Schock, sir, if you would say we stand adjourned.
Were you going to take a final roll call for structural?
Oh, sorry. Good point. Yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself. Commissioner Schock.
Here.
Warner Chang.
Here.
Commissioner Compton.
Here.
Chris Fartleman. Chris?
Yeah.
All right. Eduardo Fernandez for Jamie Gascon.
Here.
Joe Hetzel.
Here.
Here. Do Kim.
Here.
Dan Labridge.
Here. Here.
I think we're getting our feedback loop here. C.W. McCumber.
Here.
Craig Perino.
Here.
And Dick Wilhelm for Steve Strawn?
Here.
And is Chris Fartleman on the call or not?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, so we have 11 of 11. Sorry, thank you for that, Mr. Commissioner Schock. Go ahead, sir, if you would adjourn the meeting, sir.
Okay, thank you, everybody, for attending, and we stand adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, everybody.